are listening to Radio Recovery. We're an outreach of the Latah Recovery Center. She's Denise, and I'm Johnny. And we throw out a few announcements here for the Latah Recovery Center calendar. September is National Recovery Month, and happy third birthday to Latah Recovery Center. They're going to celebrate their birthday with an open house on September 15th, which is coming up quicker than you think. It's going to be from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at their location on Main Street. It's 531 South Main Street, Suite B, right next door to One World Cafe and
Wackadoos. And so if you need to get a haircut, you should go in and see Tammy, and she will take care of you very well.
More shameless promotion.
Absolutely. Love my hairdresser.
I feel so bad. Their phone number down there is area code 208-883-1045. Their email is latahrecoverycenter@gmail.com. If you want to help or have questions, you can also follow them on Twitter at latahrecoverycr. And they also have a Facebook presence. As well as I don't know why I didn't put it on here, but they even have their own site, and it's latahrecoverycenter.org. Let's see, the next deal coming up is
the Latah Recovery Festival. Come listen to the community members share their stories of recovery. There will be a theme, overcoming the fear and stigma and recovery. Mental illness and substance abuse is not a choice. September 22nd from 4:30 p.m. to 9 p.m. Enjoy food, and there will be door prizes as well. Also enjoy or
compete
in the chili cook-off. Drop off your chili entry by 4 p.m. and include a list of ingredients. Location is the Latah Fairgrounds, 1021 Herald Street in Moscow. And we have some upcoming events.
Yeah. Upcoming guests, yeah. For the balance of September, for Recovery Month, we're going to have three individuals come in from the Latah Recovery Center and share their story of recovery, which should be really fun to listen to. Mm-hmm. I love it when we have people in here who can share what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now, because that's really our mission here is to get the word out that there's life after alcohol and dope and mental illness. Once it's understood and treated, you know, you can have a pretty good life. I know I have, at any rate.
To inspire our listening audience and share with you what some of our guests have done that have been successful in our community, to let you know of the different businesses that are here in the Latah Recovery Center, what they do. So it's just really great to have those guests in and share their story. It really brings a lot of hope to myself and to Johnny, and we also want to share that with the community as well.
Yes, we do. And I'm going to throw out a quick public service announcement for the group Food Not Bombs. They're doing a program where they have a free meal and groceries, and they do this at the Unitarian Universalist Church of the Palouse, which is at 420 East 2nd Street in Moscow. It's Sundays at 4:30 p.m. Come on down and have something to eat and pick up some groceries if you need them. You can follow them on Facebook at FNB Palouse. And they're a great organization. They've been dropping off some goodies at the Recovery Center as well. So for those days in between, you can always check in at the Recovery Center. Wealth of information can be found there. Not only that, but now you might be able to get some food. Because if you're hungry, I know when I'm hungry, I don't make good decisions. So, and now,
good self-care.
It's good self-care. And now, today, we have a very special guest in the studio, a good friend of mine and good friend of the city. It's Mayor Bill Lambert.
Well, thank you, Johnny, and hello, everyone. Third birthday for the Recovery Center. That is a big deal for us.
Yes, it absolutely is. You know, it started out on a shoestring and has pretty much remained there, and yet the work that they do there is just fantastic.
It really is. It gets a lot of information out to the community for different services that we have here, even different services that we have statewide for treatment centers and detox centers and just help in all those areas. Also information on suicide, domestic violence. There's just a wealth of knowledge on that wall in there.
You name it. If you're drowning, they have the life preserver that will fit you.
They do. So. And they also have their peer recovery coaches that are in recovery as well. So they understand what people are going through. And when you walk in there, you can have a peer that can talk with you about how things are looking in life and just kind of get some support and direction for what you want to accomplish.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's a multitude of good things. And of course, they always have coffee. You know?
Coffee is a good thing. Coffee makes the world go around.
You got to have coffee.
Got to have coffee. So,
So Bill, Mr. Mayor, I'm not sure how I should address you.
Just address me as Bill, as you've always done, John. Okay. That's just fine with me.
Yeah, our friendship goes beyond your tenure as mayor of the town, and I think a lot of people probably know you from your management days at Safeway, and you're a very recognizable face in the community. So tell us about that face. How did it come to Moscow?
Well, thank you, Johnny. Well, this face came to Moscow in 1977, and it looked a lot more smooth, John. It didn't have the wrinkles and the gray I've got now and the bags under my eyes. But, of course, yes, I came here as a store director for Safeway, and I've been here for years and years and years. And so, man, if you live long enough in the same place long enough, you should be recognizable if you're getting out and doing anything. Anyway, my tenure here has been here for over 40 years, which raised both my sons here. Well, one was born here, one was two, and we moved here. And my late wife, Verlina, who passed away in 2010 from that nasty disease, cancer.
Yeah, we're sorry for that.
She was a good woman, but the thing of it is we wanted, kind of a quick story here, Johnny. When we first came to Moscow, Idaho, neither one of us had ever been in this town, and so my late wife said, "Where in the world's Moscow, Idaho at? And what are we going to do there? Why are we going?" So on and so forth. So we got here, and she was actually kind of blue about being here at first, and I said, "Well, honey, it's only going to be like 2 years, 3 years at the tops, maybe four, and we'll be fine." And then away we go with the corporate structure. And so in 1979, I had my other son was born here. And so in early 81, I had an opportunity to go up and upper management with the company I was with. And so I said, "Honey, we can move." And she said, "Why in the world would we want to leave?"
Started to love it.
So here I am in 2018. And so this is home. So it's been a wonderful, wonderful place. I'd like to put a plug in for the recovery center, Johnny. And
please do.
I want to go back 5 years ago. This is the third birthday of it. But 5 years ago, a very good friend of mine, my name is Tom Stroshine, who was a county commissioner at that time.
Right.
Not too long after I became the mayor. And he set up an appointment with me to write a letter to our legislators about a recovery center here in Moscow. And oh my gosh. And he twisted my arm. And Tom is a very, very persistent person for anybody that knows him. And he's consistent on it. And so I did. So he was the chair of the county commissioners. And of course, I was the mayor. So we both wrote letters for our respective jobs that we do in our area. And he made, I don't know how many trips in front of the legislators down at Boise going after this thing. And he worked tirelessly for us to get this. And I, at first, I just kind of took it with a grain of salt. I didn't take it with the seriousness that that it has. But man, it was one of the best things that I ever did. And of course, sometimes we all need prodded a little bit. Because of Tom Stroshine's diligence is a reason that this center was able to come here, because they were only going to put three of these up in the entire state. And we had the shot at North Idaho, as because of Tom's persistence, why we ended up getting it here in Moscow. So hats off to former Commissioner Stroshine, because he was the guy that was very instrumental in making it happen.
Well, and he's still heavily involved with the Latah Recovery Center. I'm not sure if he's the chair or on the board, but I know I've also seen him down there in the office, pushing Daryl around, making sure things get done.
Well, you know, Tom is, he, anytime I get a chance to point that out with him, I sure do, because he needs that recognition. He's a very modest man when it comes to things like this and not really wanting the recognition, but he clearly deserves it. And oh, by the way, I think you got the perfect guy with Daryl being ahead of it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
He's perfect for that job.
Yeah, he's a great administrator, but he has this just such a relaxed, calm way about mm-hmm. him that I could easily see how I would go triple head on fire nuts trying to keep things running down there. But you talk to him, it's like, yeah, we'll take care of this, we'll do that. I was in there the other day asking him, I wanted to provide a refrigerator for the place because they have some small ones. And he explained to me in a very calm way that, yeah, that would be great, but then I have to have somebody who's willing to clean it out weekly and, you know, keep up with it. And if we move things around, RJ won't be able to reach anything because RJ is only about 2 feet tall. And just talking to him, he said no in such a polite way that, you know, I really felt good about it, which is a rare thing for me when someone says no.
He's very calm and laid back. He gets everything done. It's just really great.
Yeah, it's awesome. He's an awesome guy.
Well, you know, it doesn't matter who we are, and all of us, Johnny, or this recovery center, all of us in our lives have rough patches. It doesn't matter who it is. It doesn't matter if it's me or if it's you or who it is. And those of us that can recognize that and move forward with it, it is very important that we can move forward and do these different things. Because if you don't have any kind of a problem, you're probably lying to yourself or kidding yourself. Because I'll go back. I'm going to go back in 2010 when my wife passed, and before that, I went through a tough patch myself. Mm-hmm. And one of the things, and this is actually how I met Johnny and others, some of that are very dear friends of mine, that have had their own battles in life to work with. Because, see, I didn't want to step off that plank, and I knew I probably would if I didn't do something about mm-hmm. it. And so I got a chance to be surrounded by folks that had serious problems, that were working through those problems, a lot of them, and I've got the utmost respect for them because they were able to take charge of their lives and do something about it. And that's what a recovery center is about, but that's also about being able to recognize it yourself and having those friends out there that will be a part of it, that are always there for you. Because, and the reason they're for you, ladies and gentlemen, is because they've gone through the same thing. And don't kid yourself. If you got a problem out there, there's others out there that have got that same problem or a similar problem, and they're very, very anxious to help you.
Right. Absolutely. It's for me, it's an honor and a privilege to share my story with people and to let them know that, you know, there is light at the end of the tunnel, and no, it is not a train. It aids in my recovery. And it's key to my recovery. If you don't give it away, you have to give it away to keep it. And yeah, that's absolutely right. And, you know, people at the recovery center, they understand that.
Absolutely. And they're very willing to be there to be a part of it, to help you, whoever you are.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's
we didn't go through all the different types of pain and things that we went through in our lives and struggles and things to not then give back. It's very healing.
Well, you know, now, listen, really, you know, when you start out as a kid, Denise, or a young person, do you want to grow up to be a alcoholic or a drug addict? No.
It wasn't on my list.
No, I don't think it's on anybody's bucket list. No. But these things do happen to people. And so that's what this is all about. And every single community, I don't care what community you have, you find these problems mm-hmm. everywhere. And guess what? It affects men, it affects women, it affects children, it affects older people, it affects every ethnicity that we have on the face of this earth, every religious sect we have on this earth. It will affect all of us in some way, shape, or form. And if you are out there and you're clean and you don't ever have any problems, I can guarantee you, you've got a relative that does.
That's right.
And let's all be honest with ourselves. Man, we can all think of that right off the top of our heads, some people that need some help and need to work on some things. And, of course, we always have to look at our own nest first, Johnny, and and make sure it's clean. Isn't that correct?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. As a matter of fact, I have a sibling who contacted me some years ago and started asking these kind of leading questions about AA and sobriety and what it's about. And, you know, I had known for a while that there were times where she drank alcoholically, or at least that was my view of it. And she got into the program Alcoholics Anonymous, and she's active in it, and both of my parents were active alcoholics. One of them found the AA program 10 years before she passed of a unrelated disease, and one never did really find it and ended up dying from cirrhosis of the liver. So, yeah, you know, had I not, you know, been given the, you know, the genetic code to wind up where I am today, I would have known people. It would have been somebody close, I wouldn't have known how to deal with it. In reality, I didn't know how to deal with it myself on my own, you know. Mm-hmm. Walking into one of those rooms and listening to people who had been there and done that and were able to share the information with me so I could get better.
Yeah. And I was going to say, and I was previously one of the type of people who assumed that, you know, that was some kind of a choice that people were making. I was the kind of sort of late bloomer in my addiction and didn't start in that until my very late 20s, early 30s, growing up with a brother who had struggled with addiction until from when I was very young. And I just had the worst attitude. I really did. I mean, I look back at that and I think, oh, geez. And then going through it myself, I was really shown a totally different perspective. I didn't set out to do the things that were happening. You know, I mean, it was definitely a choice to continue on and not get help. But when I did get help, I started to finally realize, hey, you know what? I'm an addict. I am. Just mm-hmm. like the other people that I had, you know, had these thoughts that it was their choice or that they just didn't care, you know?
Right.
And so my perspective changed hugely. And that's pretty much what I got on that. But
yeah.
And so the other thing I'll share is that I've definitely found over the years, my 44 years of existence, that I really go wrong when I don't get into community with people, that asking for help and having close friends and community and places that I know I can go to deal with different issues is crucial, because it's in those painful moments where, you know, we lose someone or we have, you know, just a life thing happen that's just so devastating. The choice for me is either to walk forward with people in my community or to make bad decisions. And my bad decisions never turn out well.
Right.
So today I choose to reach out to the people that are close to me or go step through a door of a business and talk to somebody and get some help.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And see, the ladies and gentlemen, the example that Denise just gave you, she fixed herself anybody else.
Yes.
And as a result of that, she can really help out.
Yes.
And so that's what you really did, Denise. Yeah. You recognized it and you fixed it. And you fixed yourself. And like I said, before you can fix anybody, you got to be able to fix yourself.
Absolutely. 100% agree. Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, hey, Bill, I know something you're passionate about. You were the keynote speaker last winter at the Latah Recovery Center's big annual breakfast and fundraiser. And I listened to you there. I was running the video section of the program very badly, but I had, you know, in my defense, I did have a full 3 seconds of training before I was thrust behind the keyboard and voluntold to handle that. But listening to your topic was the opioid epidemic, and we spoke a little bit before the show. And it is indeed an epidemic, and you're very passionate about getting the information out about it. And maybe later on, after we take a break, we'll talk about what we can do about it. So why don't you go ahead and share some of that incredible information?
Well, first, I must say where I learned a lot of this information was back at National League of Cities in Washington, D.C., and I sat in on 2 seminars about the opioid crisis across America. And there were hundreds of communities that were in this meeting room listening, so I was writing notes as fast as I possibly could. And, of course, they had different sites I could get on, and you can study these things, but I was overwhelmed by the statistics. And it, ladies and gentlemen, is a crisis. And one of the stats that stuck out in my mind, the first thing I want to say is here in America with opioids, We in the United States has 4.3% of the world's population, but we consume 81% of the world's supply of OxyContin and oxycodone, and that is a staggering number. I mean, it was almost hard to believe this. And so I was looking at a map that they showed us, and I investigated some of the results in our own state here in the state of Idaho and other states. And so, and this information is 2017 information, so it is outdated a little bit. I don't know what the current numbers are, but I'm anxious to find out what those are this coming winter. But just to give you an example, the overdose years in the state of Idaho for the previous 12 months, the overdose deaths that we know were 233, which was up 7.9% over the previous year. And so I went around and checked out some of the other states, and I want to just give you some numbers on some of the other states. Washington had 1,051 deaths, and these are deaths that they know of, the emergency room deaths. Oregon, 480. Montana, 123. Wyoming, 63. Utah, 597. Yes, that's correct. Utah, 597. Nevada, 732. And that is a total of 3,269 overdose deaths in those states that I just mentioned. Now, isn't that amazing? And that was in a one-year period.
It's a huge and number.
That's any age. That's any age. It can happen at any age.
Staggering. And so do we have a issue that we need to... a strategy and an issue that we need to address with opioids? Yeah, in America, absolutely. This outline that I went through at the National League of Cities, and I looked for all these other different informations, and I got to share with you, we know that from local law enforcement and state law enforcement, we know that heroin has been on the rise the last 3 or 4 years. And actually, heroin disappeared almost completely off the radar for a number of years. It was prevalent back in the 60s and 70s, and then it kind of disappeared to other types of drugs, but then it made a huge comeback. And I'll tell you the reason for that. 4 out of 5 new heroin users start from prescription drugs. Think about that, ladies and gentlemen. 4 out of 5 heroin users got their start from prescription drugs. And where did this come from? Well, this came from cabinets, mom and dad's cabinet, grandma and grandpa's cabinets, uncles and aunts, and so on and so forth. And these are what happened. This is what happens to people who get hooked on these things. And then once they can't get that drug, they go to another drug because they are definitely hooked. Now, I gave you some stats on the deaths in 5 surrounding states of us, I thought to myself, well, it'd be kind of interesting to find out how some of the larger populous states fared in this same map on overdose drugs. And so I checked off the highest 5 states in America, and this was in 2017. Florida, 5,604.
Wow.
Pennsylvania, 5,024. Ohio, Midwest.
Middle America,
5,256. California, the most populous state, 4,627. New York, 3,703. And so those top 5 states totaled 24,582 in 2017. Yeah. Now we're talking about a total of over 60,000. 60,000 more, ladies and gentlemen, than murders and car wrecks combined. Think about that one. More than murders and car wrecks that kill people.
Right.
And those are the ones that we know that died of overdose through emergency room. It's a staggering, staggering number. In fact, this number has been high enough that the longevity of American people in America now have actually lowered for the first time. It's been because of drug use and drug overdose deaths. This is one of the key factors for it. So, do we have a problem? Yes, we got a problem.
I think we have a problem.
And here's an interesting thing. In 2015, 11.8 million Americans age 12 years old and older reported misusing opioids, OxyContin, oxycodone. 11.8 million.
Wow.
That's a staggering, staggering number. The amount of opioids, I got to tell you this one too, that was prescribed in 2015 in America was enough for every American to be medicated around the clock for 3 weeks.
Wow.
Think about that one, Johnny.
Holy
the sick. Amount of opioids prescribed in 2015 was enough for every single American to be medicated around the clock for 3 weeks. We have well over 300 million people in this country, 320 million. Now, do we have a few too many pills out there floating
around?
Yeah,
and I'm still back at the 11.5 million of people that abused abused. Okay, I'm going to try to pick myself up off the floor for a sec. Wow.
Yeah, really. Get up, Denise, first.
Jeez.
God's sake. Yeah, no, I'm sitting here not commenting because my jaw has gone totally slack. And
my brain's exploded.
Here's another statistic, ladies and gentlemen. 1,000 people per day are treated in emergency rooms for misusing opioids. Yes, that's correct. 1,000 per day. Every 25 minutes in America, a baby is born addicted to opioids in the United States. So that's a sad, sad figure. That gives me goosebumps and makes me want to cry, Johnny. That is terrible. Now, what could possibly go wrong, ladies and gentlemen, when I just gave you those numbers? Do you think we need to do something about it? Yes, we need to do something about it. We need to get fired up and get the red flags out and talk in every single school in this country. And this just isn't a law enforcement issue or an issue for EMTs and paramedics throughout our fire departments. This is an issue for every citizen walking the streets of this country.
Everyone, absolutely. Because it's going to affect everyone somehow.
So there you have it. Oh, by the way, there's a website out there I want to put everybody onto, and it's called weareprevent.org. And that is weareprevent.org. The information I just gave you, you can go in and research it, this for yourself and other information. It's staggering.
Wow, that is scary. Hey, you know what? While my brain digests that,
while
we swap out the mayor's microphone for one that actually works 100% of the time, we're going to play a little music, and we'll come back. And now that everybody... at least myself and Denise are firmly convinced that we need to do something about it. We'll talk about what we're doing about it when we come back.
You're listening to KRFP, Moscow Pullman Recovery Radio.
No one knows what it's like to be the bad man, to be the sad man, behind blue eyes. No one knows what it's like to be hated, to be faded, to telling only lies. But my dreams, they aren't as empty as my conscience seems to be. I have my love is vengeance that's never free. No one knows what it's like to feel these feelings like I do, and I blame you. No one bites back as hard on their anger. None of my pain war can show through. But my dreams, they aren't as empty as my conscience seems to be. My love is vengeance that's never free. Just tell life to be the bad man, to be the sad man behind blue eyes. Thank you.
That was The Who, Behind Blue Eyes. You're listening to Recovery Radio. I'm Johnny, she's Denise, and our guest today is Mayor Bill Lambert, mayor of the beautiful city of Moscow, Idaho. And Bill, before the break, we were talking, listening to some staggering statistics about the opioid crisis in this country and how many lives it takes on a daily, hourly basis, babies being born with it. But I guess the next natural step is, what do we do? How can we address this? Being our father mayor, what can the city do to help people along? I mean, obviously, we talked about Mr. Stroheim.
Stroheim.
I always mix that up. And yourself writing to get us to the head of the line for getting a recovery center here. Mm-hmm. And I know you've actively supported it over the actually 5 years since the inception, even though it's only been open for 3 years. Mm-hmm. Getting it going, where do we go from here? What's your personal vision for it?
Well, there's several fold, Johnny. One is education. Now, that may sound simplistic, but with the staggering number that I gave earlier, they need to start this in the middle schools. Mm-hmm. I gave a stat that there's in 2015, 11.8 million Americans from age 12 and older reported misusing opioids. So that means junior high kids, middle school kids. And so the school has got to be also a part of this. And they are. Our superintendent, Greg Bailey, is very much involved with this, as are principals of our local schools. And so that's a big thing. And of course, Greg himself was at that recovery center breakfast that we had.
Right.
And him and I had a really great conversation. So there's one end of it. Our police department as well. And that involves both Latah County, our city of Moscow, as well as Idaho State. Look at our police department. Believe me, a lot of the things that they have to deal with, whether it be theft or violent types of rages that people have, a lot of those are associated with drug use and or alcohol.
Right.
And so if they can solve a lot of those problems, it makes their job a lot easier, because they don't want to be out there having to do that, but they do have to do it because they got to protect the rest of the citizens. And so you've got those things. You've got school systems, education, you got our police department, and they're very willing to be a part of that. Our clergy, and we've got a wonderful set of clergy in this town, wonderful men and women that our chief of police, Chief Fry, works with and has periodic meetings, and these are the very things they talk about. And of course, our recovery center. Right. I mean, our recovery center, you take all these folks and go kind of outline it, whether it's our school system, whether it's our police department, law enforcement, whoever it is, whether
this
it's
is
the
good,
citizens
yeah.
of the city, whether it's our clergy, and then you have right in the middle of that, the nucleus of that thing is our recovery center. Johnny, that's where that's where it's got to start.
Right.
And the most important thing for every single one of us, is you never, ever give up.
Right.
You never give up. You take one day at a time.
Right.
One day at a time, and you pound on it. And if you got somebody out there that needs some help, encourage them to get the help.
Right.
Go somewhere. There's somebody there to help them. There's somebody to help them walk through it. They're not there by themselves.
Right. And being alone is the, that's the hallmark of addiction. We isolate, and we become convinced in our minds, in our twisted little minds, that not only is that the only place to be, but also that there's no way out of it.
Right. There's just nothing that can be done.
Well, Johnny, earlier in the segment of our broadcast here, I had mentioned losing my wife in 2010 to cancer. And we were together. We were married 38 years. We were together for 42 years. And all of a sudden, I was there by myself, isolated. Right. Mm-hmm. Night after night without having anybody around. And I recognized that early enough that I knew that I needed some help setting me straight a little bit and giving me a different point of view. And it doesn't mean that you're just immediately going to go down a wrong alley or a wrong way or a different direction. What that does mean is there's people out there that can set you straight a little bit and say, hey, by the way, have you thought of this?
Right.
Have you done that? And it's like, well, I didn't even think of that. Mm-hmm. So why wouldn't I?
Yeah,
and so
exactly.
that goes right back to the point that you say, if you're isolated, you're by yourself, and you try to work these things through, you need help.
Right.
And that help can be anybody. That can be a pastor. That can be a police officer. That can be an educator. That could be someone at the recovery center. That could be a former addict. That could be a former alcoholic. It doesn't matter. There are people out there.
Right.
And it's huge for everybody to be able to recognize that. And like I said, you don't ever give up. You don't ever
right.
give up until the last breath pumps out of your body.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's a powerful and really true explanation of the way I look at it personally. I've worked with men who have been, you know, AA Jack in the Box. They're in, they're out. But they keep coming back, and you know, I'm not going to ostracize them and tell them, oh, you know, you've come in and out so many times, you know, don't come back until you're absolutely ready, because that was not my experience. I was the Jack in the Box. I was in and out and in and out and, until something finally stuck. I had some sort of psychic change that suddenly things started making more sense. I worked the program and began to work with other people, you know, using what I had learned. And suddenly sobriety, it wasn't a matter of just not drinking or not using drugs. It was a matter of learning how to live sober. And, you know, I'll never give up on that. I'll never give up on anybody that walks through a door. I met a young man who went to his first AA meeting last Wednesday, walked down the alley here today to come to the radio station. He's sitting on a milk crate talking with his coworkers at a restaurant on Main Street, from a restaurant on Main Street. And I walked up to him and I said, hey, how you doing? And, you know, his eyes opened up, you know, really broad, because I don't know where he is in his recovery. We just spoke a little bit. I gave him my phone number, you know, call me if things get rough. And suddenly my higher power, God, whatever you want to call it, puts him in an alley as I'm going mm-hmm. to do my recovery radio program.
Absolutely.
What kind of a miracle is that, you know?
Yeah, and Bill, the things that you were talking about with the different places in our town, the recovery center, I mean, you can literally walk in that door, even if you're new in town, you don't have to know anybody. The churches, the police, I'm trying to think of the other, there's also the Chaz Clinic that you can go to as well. Yep. And talk to. So really, we're really opening up and broadening the people involved in being willing to help.
Right.
And, you know, have information for our community so that it touches more people, you know. Also, you were talking about the school district and things like that to help out with younger people and things. So that part's good. It's improving,
right,
is what it sounds like.
Well, Denise, the school district, years and years ago when my boys went, and geez, my youngest one graduated from high school 22 years ago, so it's mm-hmm. been a while. But I can remember when those kids are going to school, and it was, and did we have drugs 22 years ago, or did they just all of a sudden drop out of the sky and they were here in the city of Moscow? I don't know. They've been here all along. I'll never forget this. I went to one of the conferences one time, and they really, at that time, the administrative people wanted to kind of stonewall that or kind of hide it because they didn't want to have the stigma of here we are, university town, holy smokes. Mm-hmm. How could our schools possibly have any kind of drugs? Well, we do have drugs, and we've always had them. The catch is marijuana, I know, has been around for at least 50 years, maybe 60 years. I have no idea. It's been around. It's in every single community. So the point is now they're open to it, and they see it, and they're looking for it, and they can do something about it. At one time back several decades past, we didn't have that sort of mentality.
Right.
It was like, well, we don't want to talk about it. Let's shove it into the corner. It's not really a problem. It's just those few. It's mm-hmm. just those people. It's not everybody, mm-hmm. just those people. Well, those people, Denise, are every mm-hmm. single one of us. And yeah. that's the point that I tried to make at that recovery mm-hmm. breakfast right. talk that I gave. Mm-hmm. Because right. it affects everybody. I talked about over 60,000 deaths that we know of from overdose in 2017. And think about this now. Let's use a multiplier effect. Because out of those 60,000 people that died, I can guarantee you there was at least 10 people close to them. And I'm talking about moms, dads, brothers, sisters, aunts, uncles, grandparents, perhaps siblings. And so if you take that multiplier effect, you know that it affected at least 600,000 people minimum.
Oh,
right?
Absolutely.
Right.
And maybe more than that if they got a bunch of friends added on to that.
Absolutely.
So you think about that. So the multiplier effect, this affects every one of us some way, shape, or form. And by the way, it affects employers with productivity from people. Mm-hmm. The performance that we're doing in this country, whether it be our city or our state of Idaho or in our overall country, I mean, it affects everything. Yeah. All the way to gross national product of this country.
Insurance.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
I've personally lost, in the years I've been recovering and the year prior, I've lost 1 to 2 friends a year to opiate overdose. And yeah. they were young people. They were all younger than me, just so.
Yeah.
And I'm 44.
I have a very, very good friend that lost a beautiful daughter, 21 years old, and her and another friend OD'd. And right. somehow they had one of these fentanyl patches, which is deadly. And they were drinking in addition with this somehow and used it. I don't know how mm-hmm. they used it, but they just passed out and
yeah,
woke up. And one was 19, the other was 21. I'll never, ever mm-hmm. forget that. One of the most beautiful young women I've ever seen. And what a waste.
Absolutely.
What an absolute waste. And what could she have been and could have he been?
And who how knows? Devastating that must have been to the family and friends and everyone around.
Yep. His dad was a very good friend of mine. Yeah. And God, you feel so helpless and so hopeless. And that's why these things are so critical and so important.
And
can
educating.
It happen to you out there listening? You better believe it can happen. And maybe it has, unfortunately. If it hasn't somehow affected you, it will.
Yeah, it's not a matter of if. It's a when thing.
And
it's a when thing. You can't turn on the TV and watch the news locally or nationally without some aspect of this hitting you right in the face. And you know what? God bless the people of the city of Moscow, the good work you're doing, Bill, and the council and the county commissioners. You know, we're doing something. We have a recovery center. We have forced people's eyes open to the fact of it's here mm-hmm. and we're living it, and we need to buck up and face it and work on it, and we're doing it. The people I've talked to all over town who are business owners or involved somehow in helping people coming out of jail that have gone because of something they did related to their drug use or alcoholism. They all see the need to help. And a little newsflash for any employers out there. If somebody has worked a good recovery program and comes to you and wants to have a job, give them a chance, because you're probably going to hire somebody who's incredibly talented, bright. These diseases, addiction it's not selective. It happens across the board. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, it seems to happen to a lot of really bright, really well-intentioned people. And when they get sober and they have a good program, They do some pretty incredible things. And if you don't feel like hiring them, do yourself a favor and talk to some people that have hired them and do have them working for them. Mm-hmm. Find out what kind of advantage you can get from that.
Absolutely. And I really, on the subject of education in our schools and things, I you know, a lot of times on our show, it's really more about talking to the listening audience. And we're thinking, in my mind, I'm thinking adults. And so I really like the idea that you brought up and that you're sharing about how already, you know, that is a part of what's going on in the school district and with the principals and things, that these things are being talked about, so that I know that my kids have someone to talk to, their counselors or whatever, if they need to. But I guess what I'm saying is that I feel like that's really important, because as you said, we have 12-year-olds getting a hold of these things. There are kids dying, you know, and that's a subject that I feel like is really important to work more on, well, and be supportive
you
of.
Think back, Denise, the guests that we've had, almost every single story we've heard from every person, their first encounter with alcohol or marijuana or pills or whatever, almost every one of them, it happened at that critical age, mm-hmm. that sixth grade on, that 11, 12, 13, and into high school.
So I have a question. So Bill, in our community, just everyday people in our community, is there any advice that you could give on some of the things that locally we could do that would be helpful in this, on this topic?
Well, I think as we go along, we have to always be aware of what is around us and what is going on. We got to be realistic about it and address it that way. That yes, it is here, and yes, we need to work on it, and we need to work on it every single day. And so we need to work together as groups. You know, I'll always like to use this analogy. This isn't a Democrat or Republican thing, ladies and gentlemen. This is a human being thing. And we got men, we got women, we got adults, yeah. We got kids, we got teenagers. We need everybody in our circle here in the city of Moscow working towards the same thing and recognizing it. And that's how I think. Will we ever wipe it out? I don't know. I certainly hope we do. But realistically, it's going to be something that we're going to have to battle every single day. And we never give up. I said that earlier mm-hmm. on the show here. And you just keep working on it. And you talk to those people. And you be aware of it. And listen. And for those out there that do need help or need to talk about it, they've got places that they can go. There's all kinds of places they can yes. go and say, hey, I need somebody to help me out with this.
Yes.
And somebody will point them in the right direction. Mm-hmm. And we know that. And so my advice is we just need to keep working on it. We never give up on it. And we just keep pounding away day after day. And that's the point, is one day at a time.
Yeah.
Hey, today is Thursday. Let's deal with Thursday. We'll deal with Friday when Friday comes. Mm-hmm. Right. But let's yeah. deal with today. And let's mm-hmm. get through today. And at least see what we can get accomplished. And then let's have a good night's sleep. And we'll tackle again when we yeah, wake up on exactly. Friday. That's how I that, see it.
That's I like right. that. That's absolutely true.
Keep it simple.
Any day I wake up on the golfing side of the grass, mm-hmm. I know it's another day where I have an opportunity to make a yep. difference.
And I have people, when they see me, it says, it's good to see you. And I said, I'm glad to be seen, Johnny, because well, that's the point.
That's an old guy thing, though.
Well, I'm telling you what. I've got a very dear friend of mine that I love dearly, and he is dying at age of 58, and he's going to die within this next 4 or 5 weeks.
Oh,
man. So sorry.
And I've known him for 50 years. He's a kid. He's like a kid brother to me, and yeah. it's devastating. And so I look at it and say, I'm knock on wood, you know, things have been pretty doggone good for me. And so we can all look, every single one of us can look around, and believe me, you'll find somebody that's in a tougher shape than you are. I don't care
Absolutely.
Who you are.
Right.
You'll
Absolutely.
Look around and say, okay, well, quit feeling sorry for myself. I had another guy, mm-hmm. a guy that used to work for me, Johnny, years ago, and this guy got 4 DUIs, and oh my God, it was like, I'll never forget him. It was like the cops were out to get him.
Oh.
Well, really? And so I said to him, and he went in front of judges, and he got hammered I don't know how many times by the judge.
That's what happens when you don't own
jail.
It.
And yeah. so I said to him, I said, let me get this straight. So the cops are after you, right? And he said, yes. I said, and they forced you to drink, right? It was them that poured it down your mouth, for crying out loud. I said, open up. We want to pour this in.
So you can be in trouble, and then we're going to arrest you to keep you off the streets from killing somebody in your vehicle. And, of course, I wasn't very popular, but that is the truth. And sometimes, there are those that can recognize that. The guys that win, and I'm using guys generically, men and women that win, can all of a sudden it dawns on them, it's like, huh, if I fix me, maybe that won't happen. How about that one?
Yeah.
Getting back to this one day at a time that we were talking about, Johnny.
Yeah.
And the ones that can never get it done, it's always somebody else's fault, for Christ's sakes, that they're there because of whatever it is that's going on in their head.
Well, yes, that will be your roadblock. If you can't see that, that will roadblock you for the rest of your life.
I'll close it up on this. You know, the fact of the matter is that every time something horrible happened in my life, there was one common factor, and that was me.
Mm-hmm. There you have it.
I was always there.
The denominator.
I had a me problem as well.
Yeah.
Not anymore. Well, not so much.
Well, hey, folks, we're up against the break here, but I want to thank Mayor Lambert for carving out an hour and a half of his day to come down here and share those staggering, frightening statistics and a really positive vision for what we all can do going forward. Really appreciate your time, Bill.
Well, Johnny, thank you and Denise for allowing me to be here. It was my pleasure to be here. And I get very wound up in this thing because it does affect all of us.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I am so grateful you're here today, too. And I'm, you know, I'm involved in recovery myself and with other things that I do in the community. But you got me fired up even.
Good.
So good. That's saying something, I feel like.
You got it. Well, that's it for Recovery Radio today. Thanks again to everybody. Thanks to our listeners for tuning in. And we'll see you next week. We are out.